It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
All righty, folks, welcome. Welcome to Money for Lunch. It's good to have you here, as always. I appreciate, I really appreciate you guys hanging out with us. And you guys have supported me going on 6 years? Oh, my goodness. I believe October was our sixth year doing Money for Lunch. Approximately 3,000-plus interviews. And some of those interviews have been with some, literally with some of the biggest people, names, if you will, in the world. Hugh Jackman, Jason Statham, Steve Forbes, Grant Cardone. My friend Arnold Schwarzenegger. I mean, you know, it's just been an unbelievable fun time. Joe Vitale. Trying to think, you know, anyway, it's a bunch of great leaders, best-selling authors, people, celebrities from Hollywood and politics, you name it. Governor Ducey from the great state of Arizona. Also, we've had Republican presidents on the show. So anyway, I'm glad you're here. I appreciate your support. I cannot tell you how much I appreciate your support. Anyway, real quick, couple of plugs. A couple of you guys have not signed up, have not subscribed to youtube.com/BertJMartinez. youtube.com/BertJMartinez. I know that a few guys have not subscribed because, you know, I only have like 566 subscribers instead of like, you know, the tens of thousands of people that really, come on, give me a break, would you? Do me a favor, please. And here's the thing. I don't want you to go to youtube.com, Bert J. Martinez, and subscribe for me. Well, yeah, I do. But some of the benefits that you'll receive by going to youtube.com/Bert J. Martinez is you'll get to see interviews that you're not going to see anyplace else. Tom Hopkins is on there, right? Just did a, you know, and so you can check out, I went to his house, hung out. We talked about business, life, success. He showed off some of his art collection. I have Anne Maria from Seven Generation Games. She is the mom, the mother of Ronda Rousey. And so she's got a tech startup, software startup, game startup company. We talked about, again, business, startups, strategies. Great interview. Four-time Mr. Universe, Guinness Book World Record holder, Mike O'Hearn, movie star, actor. He's on there. Did a great interview at his house. And coming up, interview with Boss Rutten. And so if you are if you've ever seen the movie Mall Cop, he was in Mall Cop 1 and 2. He was also second lead, if you will, in the movie Here Comes the Boom. Also, UFC champion. Speaking of UFC champion, I did an interview coming up, you'll see, with Randy Couture from the movie franchise Expendables. And the list goes on. So if you go to youtube.com/BertJMartinez, I guarantee a couple things. A, you're going to be entertained. B, you're going to learn some stuff that you can use for your business, your life, to become a better person, better business person, possibly a better lover. All right, well, I don't know about that, but, you know, definitely a better person, for sure. I kid you not. Who else? Oh, Lou Ferrigno did an interview with good old Lou Ferrigno. Anyway, so check out youtube.com/Bert J. Martinez. And do me a favor, please, and subscribe. You won't regret it. 100% satisfaction guarantee. If you don't like my content, you can unsubscribe. But I know you'll like it. And you'll like it a lot. Who else? Who else do we have coming up? Anyway, constantly doing stuff there to make life better. Hey, speaking of making life better, are you aware of the Bitcoin Super Conference coming up? One of our sponsors is putting on the first and only industry-wide Bitcoin Super Conference. Here's what they have to say.
The Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Blockchain Super Conference is coming to Dallas, Texas, February 16, 17, and 18 in 2018. If you know of a better way to get the latest insider knowledge about crypto, to hear directly from the top minds in this field, to interact personally with 800 fellow crypto lovers, hodlers, investors, miners, traders, developers, and founders, then I'd like to hear about it. If you don't, then you don't want to miss out. Register today for the Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Blockchain Super Conference. Go to BitcoinSuperConference.com and register today as a super early bird to get the lowest rates on tickets and hotel rooms. That's BitcoinSuperConference.com.
All right, all right, all right. The BitcoinSuperConference.com. Check them out. Anything you've ever wanted to know about Bitcoin is going to be there. And even if you can't attend the conference, go to BitcoinSuperConference.com. I believe you can get a bunch of free information, sign up for free, and they'll send you out some free information. And anyway, become part of their tribe, if you will. All right. I'm excited. Jeff McManus on the show today. And one of the things that I love about Jeff is he is taking his experience in landscaping and created a completely different platform from it. I talk about this all the time. Your experience and expertise can be used for just other than your experience and expertise. And this is a perfect example. Jeff McManus has a degree in landscape and ornamental horticulture from Auburn University. He is an International Society of Arboriculture certified arborist and has been director of landscape services with the University of Mississippi since 2000. He and his team won the National Professional Grounds Maintenance Society Best Maintained Campus not once, but twice. And Ole Miss was named Most Beautiful Campus by Newsweek in 2011 and the Princeton Review in 2013. His new book, Growing Weeders into Leaders. I just love that. Growing Weeders into Leaders. Leadership Lessons from the Ground Level. I just love the word play. Weeders into Leaders. Leadership Lessons from the Ground Level. Focusing on cultivating excellence among staff. He's also the author of Pruning Like a Pro. And you can find out more about Jeff at jeffmcmanus.com. Jeff McManus, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Oh, Bert, thank you so much for having me. What an honor to be on your show.
Well, you know what? I'm excited. I love what you've done. There are, I don't know, tens of thousands of landscapers and ornamental horticulturists out there. And, you know, probably less than 1% have written a book, in this case, two books, and have, you know, taken their experience and transformed it into a platform. And so I'm excited that you're here because this is something that everybody can do or should do.
Yeah, yeah. It's been game changers for me. It definitely, having a book out gets you credibility, gets your voice heard, and allows you to tell your message.
Yeah, I love it, man. I love it. And so look, I want to back up before we get into the nuts and bolts of our interview today. I want to start off by, here you are. When did you start? Let me back up. When did you start thinking about maybe publishing a book and creating a platform for yourself and you know, getting out there as a speaker and stuff like that? Because again, you know, you're a grounds maintenance, ornamental, horticultural type guy, and that's usually not what's you know, that is not usually the type of strategies that are really promoted in that industry.
Well, that's true. You're right. And those seeds were planted in me probably late 2011. And I just started thinking, man, I would love to do a book and teach and share. I love teaching and growing leaders here at work, what I do. I mean, we're always cultivating those relationships and growing our staff to challenge themselves beyond what they're doing now mentally, whether it's working with us or working in something they love. But that's what sparked the passion is I started being asked to speak more places, to teach and train, and I'm like, I need to put this in a book. And so about 2014, I started writing the book and finished. It took about 2 years, getting up every morning at 5 a.m. and writing the book for about an hour before I went into work.
Wow. And let's talk about the thing that blocks most people from actually doing their book, because first of all, writing your book is one thing. All right. Actually publishing the book, whether you go through a publishing house or you self-publish, putting it out there is another step, and it's scary, and it's what stops most people, right? So did you yourself find that you were, you know, kind of scared or, you know, a little concerned? Talk about that what do you call it, final pulling the trigger kind of situation.
Sure. I mean, the voice we listen to most is the voice that's in our head. And so whatever we're telling ourselves is what we tend to believe. I saw somewhere you had a quote from Andrew Carnegie somewhere on one of your websites that was similar to that. And so I had to learn how to talk to myself differently. As that, Jeff, you are an author. And so I pushed through those mental blocks of thinking, you know, what am I doing? What am I doing writing this? Nobody's going to read this. And nobody, you know, you have to quiet those voices. And so that was a big part of it is a daily talking to myself. And I even do this crazy little thing that I heard some great leaders do was from time to time, I'll look in the mirror and say, you're a national best-selling author. And I believe that Bert, with all my heart, that's going to happen to me. And so when I do believe it, it's just a matter of having it get done. Now it's just a matter of doing the task to finish it.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? I want to go a little bit deeper with this. To some people, hearing you say something like, you know, you get in front of the mirror and you say to yourself, hey, I'm going to be a national best-selling author, or I'm going to be a speaker, or I'm going to be a this or a that. It may sound silly to some people, but it's no sillier than listening to your voice when it tells you you can't do it. It's no sillier than, you know, allowing your own mind to dominate you in negative ways. And so my whole thing is, do you want to be silly and be positive and do, you know, and live a much more fulfilling life? Or do you want to be silly and negative and have a much more reduced life experience? Because, you know, it is kind of weird and awkward and silly, but no sillier than anything else that we do.
That's right. That's right. Tom Hawkins, who you've talked to, you know, had a great quote that says, repeat anything often enough and it'll start to become you. And so that's exactly what you're saying. I mean, when you want to do something different, get to that next level. There's not many people who are going to challenge you to that next level. It's got to come from within. and you've got to have that spark to get there. And it is very helpful to get a part of a small group or other people who think and want to go to the next level with you. That's one thing I found that was helpful for me as a little mastermind group. Just a couple of one guy in particular that I just ate lunch with, still eat lunch with about once a month here in my community. And we just talk about what we're doing and just encourage each other. Keep doing it. Okay, what are you going to have done next month? And it was nice to have a little bit of accountability along the way as I was doing this project.
Sure. Absolutely. And I think you hit another thing that a lot of us try to avoid, but it's so amazingly important, and that is accountability. Because it's so funny, if you're my boss, you're going to hold me accountable. Hey, Bert, I need you to go, and I don't know a whole lot about landscaping and horticulture, so I'm just going to make up some stuff. But, you know, hey, Bert, I need you to go take care of, you know, the weeding there at, University of Mississippi. I need you to take care of the South Lawn or whatever. Then you expect me to go do it. And then later on, you're going to hold me accountable. Hey, Bert, did you take care of, you know, Ole Miss on that South Lawn like I asked you to? Yes, I did. Or no, I didn't. Or maybe I finished half of it because, you know, this happened and that happened. You know, you expect that accountability. And sometimes what makes the difference in our lives is the ability to hold ourselves accountable. Because let me tell you, back to that internal conversation, the people who don't get the things done are the people who let themselves off the hook and don't hold themselves accountable versus the ones who say, you know, who again, hold themselves accountable. That accountability is a very powerful, sexy thing.
Absolutely. I mean, what you're talking about is discipline, having self-discipline. And
yes.
And when I first started working out in the gym, probably 6 years ago, I was not motivated to go in there. So what I did is hired a trainer, a student trainer, someone who was 20 years younger than me. But the biggest reason I did it was, one, not to hurt myself, but two, is to get myself in the dadgum gym. I mean, I'm not going to pay this guy and then me not show up. And I tell you, it worked. It's got me a new habit. And that's what you're talking about. Build those new habits. The habits are what will take you over the top. It's those little grinds. It's those little things that you have to do every day. Roger Staubach, who used to be the quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys, had a quote, something to the effect that to do the spectacular things, you know, like on Sundays, you have to do the unspectacular things throughout the week. And it's all about showing up. At 5 o'clock in the morning, there is nobody watching you write a book. And
right.
You know, what I had to do was with a guy that I was telling you about earlier, I just said, hey, hold me accountable. I want to have this many chapters done by the next time we meet. And that was very helpful for me to get pushing to get through with that book.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. I love that. And I also want to throw this out there because this is a little nuance that I picked up on. You know, sometimes we need help and maybe we cannot afford or maybe we don't want to pay for, quote, the full retail price. I'll just say it like that. And one of the things I picked up on is the fact that you got a student trainer to help you. To me, that's a marvelous idea. There's a lot of people out there who need to get in better physical health, but you know, you get a professional trainer, they're whatever they are, 40, 50, 60 bucks an hour, but you get a student trainer, you might be able to get that for, you know, 10, 15, 20 bucks. I mean, there's just so many different ways of getting things done when you really want to get them done.
That's right. I'm a little bit frugal. So you're right. I think I'm paying $15 an hour. And I checked around with all the big gyms, and I just said, you know, big thing I needed is somebody to encourage me to get in here, and that's what I needed. And that's, man, I tell you what, that's cheap. That is a cheap way to get in, $15 a session.
Yes, and I love it. Matter of fact, I'm gonna do that myself because I also need a trainer, but I don't need a trainer so much. I've been working out forever, but it's good to have a partner there and somebody that can push you and get you to, hold you accountable, push you a little bit. And so I love that. So I'm excited. I mean, right there is a nugget that we can all take. We all need help, but maybe instead of paying full retail, we can look for a trainer or an intern that can help us out. Matter of fact, Sharon Lecter, who's been on my show several times, best-selling New York Times best-selling author, and she used to be the CEO of Rich Dad, Poor Dad, she hires tons of interns. And again, you forget some of the stuff that you know, but I just realized, besides talking to you, that little nugget of inspiration, she hires a lot of interns, and from there, she's gotten some of her best partners and employees, but they start off as intern, and she gets them at a very nominal price. Anyway, so yeah, I love it because I'm also a frugal guy, so I love that tip. Let's talk about this. Let's get into the book, and the book again is Growing Weeders into Leaders: Leadership Lessons from the Ground Level. And I'm with my guest today is Jeff McManus. So let's talk about laying the groundwork for creating a unified team. This is so important because, first of all, if you want to scale your business, you're going to need a team, and you're going to need a unified team. So talk about laying this groundwork.
Well, you kind of have a team in order to scale, to make money, to be able to do other things that you want to do. You can't do it all yourself. I mean, if you fall into that trap, nobody can do it better than me, then you'll stay small and your influence will stay small as well. But when we're doing what we're doing here, 1,000 acres, we're ranked in the top, constantly in the top 10 every year, if not the best. We've got to have people that are bought in, who work together, because we have a very small group who does this. So one of the biggest foundations that we've learned is we've got to build trust. We have got to build trust with our team, that they like each other to a degree, that they'll enjoy working with one another. So we do some things that forces us to build that trust. We do things a little bit different. We have meetings where we let everybody participate. We invite everybody to a lot of our meetings and try to be transparent, try to get ideas. I ask a lot of questions, try to get input from our team so that they have some ownership in the process. And I learned this from one of my bosses, Dr. Robert Kayat, who used to be the chancellor here. He says, I don't want it to be you work for me. I want it to be we. Did you get that? I don't want it to be that you work for me. I want it to be about we. And so that's our philosophy. It's we. We're in this together. We're going to create national championship results. And we got to do that at the very foundation of building trust.
Man, I love that so much. Yeah. I think that when you get down to it, you look at some of these big people, and the reason that they're big, and iconic, Thomas Edison. I'll start with Thomas Edison. People are in awe of Thomas Edison. He had created 100 inventions in a period of a decade, right? All these patents and inventions. And I always tell people that one of the reasons that Thomas Edison was so prolific, so awesome, wasn't because he did it all by himself. If anybody does any amount of digging, they will realize that Tom Edison had a bunch of people working for him. And I bet you that in a lot of occasions, Tom Edison would have a concept of an idea, and he would hand it off to an associate to develop that idea. In fact, one of his interns / associates, was, Tesla, who created a bunch of stuff. But my point being is Thomas Edison would not be Thomas Edison if he tried to do it all himself. But because he had that we over me type strategy, he was able to create a lot and employ a lot of people and some of those people were able to share in his good fortune.
Absolutely. I love it. Edison, I mean, Edison's a great example. Genius is 1% inspiration and 99% perspiration. I mean, the dude knew how to never stop. I mean, he, and you're right.
Yes.
He had so many people working with him. I saw his lab down in Florida. He moved down there with Henry Ford, and his lab burned down, and it was a pretty big building. I mean, he had a lot of scientists and people working with him. So you're right. He knew how to scale. He knew how to grow.
Yeah, it is a fantastic thing. And the other, occurrence, something that happens, you know, as you start to create some momentum, you eventually get to hang out with people that you admire. And again, back to Edison hanging out with Henry Ford, right? And so these guys connected, and they would not have connected. If Henry Ford would have quit prior to creating the Ford Motor Company, he would never have connected with the likes of Tom Edison or vice versa. So, all right, so back to creating the groundwork. Let me ask you this. When you're talking to a company or a team leader or, you know, maybe, you know, what do you tell somebody? How do you start laying this groundwork? What are some of the things that you must do and some of the things that you must avoid?
One of the things you must do, I don't, whether you're leading yourself, just yourself, or you're leading a team of thousands, is you must lead by example. I mean, you lead by example every day, but you've got to lead correctly by example. So Bert, we say in our area, you've got to weed by example, buddy. You got to be willing to get your hands dirty and weed by example. You can't be that guy who points and says, hey, you go do it. You got to be willing to get involved yourself and from time to time get your hands dirty. Show the team that they can count on you. You've got their back. And that you understand the process. That's the number one thing. That's the elementary start right there. And then second, then you start looking, now that you're a leader, you got to look at developing more leaders. And so that's where it changed for me. That's when our success started happening, is when I quit focusing so much on growing great plants, and I started focusing on growing great people. And so I started a culture of leadership. And again, we just do things different now. We in our Monday morning meetings for our department, I'll give you an example. I used to lead those meetings. I used to do all the talking, yak, 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 yak. And then it hit me. Just, why are you talking? People aren't listening. Let them do the talking. Let them participate. So we now let each of our team members lead a meeting. We have others who teach us a plant of the week. Others who will teach us a safety tip of the week. And so everybody has a role. We just have a little agenda sheet, and everybody follows the agenda, and everybody has a part. Somebody talks about the weather. Somebody talks about the mowing we're going to do, the detail flowers. And so now, you know, I speak maybe 2 or 3 minutes or just a little bit where everybody else now is participating. That forces everybody to get their people skills, their speaking skills, their leadership skills in one way to get sharper.
Yeah, and because you're not the talking head of the group and everybody's got a part, then you know that more people are going to be engaged. You're going to have, more participation. And, you know, one of the things that I love about the strategy is that the individuals who are getting involved or being engaged in the agenda of that meeting also have a deeper respect for what you're doing as the leader, right? And they start to see, well, you know, maybe Jeff doesn't have it as easy as I thought. And so it's a nice way of as you said, you know, growing those leaders. letting them experience it.
Exactly. And that, you know, we've figured out too that cross training helps a lot with what you just said, where everybody thinks I'm the only one doing the work. Well, let's cross train. Let's put people in other areas and let's develop them. We want our folks to be more valuable to the organization, to have more value, to have more confidence, to see the value that they bring for this whole university. You know, one of the things that you've got to do is tie it into a vision, tie it into something bigger than what than just yourself. So we talk about we're cultivating greatness. That's our vision, is we cultivate greatness. And the way we do that, Bert, is that we know that 62% of prospective college students who come to a college campus will make a decision in the first few moments of a visit on whether or not they're going to that school based on the appearance. Well, we're a big part of that. Landscaping is a big part. So we know that we're recruiting the future Hall of Famers, future doctors, future lawyers, people who are going to cure HIV, people who are going to take our country in a positive direction. So we're a small part of cultivating their greatness. So that allows us to see a bigger picture of our purpose of what we're doing in our work. And we refer to that often. And that's not something that I always see leaders and mid-level management comfortable with doing. They're comfortable with doing the task, but they're not comfortable about having a vision inside a bigger organization or a vision in their small company to get people excited about something bigger and better that they're doing. So that's a challenge for everyone, is to think about what is it that you really do.
Yeah, I like that. Let's talk about this. One of the things that in your book is you talk about finding the low-hanging fruit that provides easy wins and builds team morale. Talk about this.
Yeah. I mean, you, depending on where you are in your career and where you are in your place, but you got to find some wins, some ways that the team, you can start turning the team into the direction you're wanting to go. And so we had a dysfunctional department. We were last place when it came to landscaping amongst all the other universities. And we just started talking about a little bit, could we be number one one day? Could we be the best of the best? And then I had to start giving the confidence, had to start finding some things that we could do quickly to build the confidence in our team. And it was as simple as sometimes buying the right equipment for the people. It was as simple as going through and doing some lifting of limbs that needed to be lifted, that were hitting people in the head. Just little simple things that people noticed and started telling our people, man, that looks so good. You guys made this area look awesome. Well, they started feeling that appreciation from outside our department of what they were doing. And that to me was the low-hanging fruit. Be able to take advantage of some small wins in the department, because those small wins lead to bigger wins. You know, take care of the little details and then the big things will happen. And over time, as we kept getting these small wins, we reduced our mowing from 10 days down to 4 days, and we didn't increase anything. We didn't increase the labor. We didn't increase the mowers. We actually decreased our labor at the same time. And people were excited about that. They felt that low-hanging fruit. There it was. There was a quick win. Wow, it took us 10 days. Now we can mow this whole campus in 4 days. And little things like that really started helping building our morale and excitement for what we were doing.
Yeah, and again, I love this strategy. Sometimes people are looking for that home run, right? And so maybe to take your example, maybe you can walk into an area and instead of painting the room, maybe it just needs, you know, let's just clean it up, right? Let's just, as you said, what's the low-hanging fruit in this department? Let's do that first. What's the low-hanging fruit? And I talk about this too. When I'm working with a new client, the first low-hanging fruit that I talk about is, when was the last time you contacted your existing clients about buying more? Or what about clients who haven't purchased from you in the last 12 months? There's some low-hanging fruit. So everybody has low-hanging fruit. They just got to figure out what it is.
Exactly. I loved what you were starting to say about even just cleaning up your room, your apartment. Just put one thing away. You know, just put one thing away. And then start with a second. And it's the little things. After a while, you get the momentum. And it, man, does it start to build. And it is, and once you start building that momentum, then other people see it and they get excited and the expectations of what you're doing just continue to rise. And it gets you out of that negative mindset of thinking, I can't do this, because now you're doing it.
Right. Yeah, because sometimes when we look at something, it can be overwhelming. But I think it was Brian Tracy or Zig Ziglar or one of those guys who said, inch by inch, it's a cinch. Yard by yard, it's really hard, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So I love that. Low-hanging fruit to provide some easy wins. Everybody's got them. Let's talk about this. Which practice fails and which hit pay dirt in adopting high standards of professionalism? Talk about these practices that you have discovered.
Well, what we've done is we've created this program called Landscape University. And Landscape University gives us the ability to train our staff and customize it to our property. And guess who develops the classes? It's not me. It's not the supervisors. It's all of us. So we create the classes. Everybody has ownership in it. And so it's become our program. And when I go and teach this to other organizations, I talk this to a real estate group, same principles. It became all of theirs because everybody had ownership in it. You know, what do you want the person to know the very first day they start working in your organization? Don't cloud it up by all the big deals you want them to do. What's the very first thing you want them to know the first day? And let's write that down, okay? And now let's write down a couple other things they need to know maybe the first week. And it's amazing when you start putting in those little pieces, then your standards are set. Okay, what do we want to know how we cut the grass? We want to make sure that they're not scalping the grass. They're not cutting too low. And so we put that in the standards. Maybe we even take a few pictures of what we want, a few pictures of something that's gone bad, and we put those in a PowerPoint and we just show them. Then it's real simple because everybody gets the standards. They see what the expectations are, and that's honestly how we're winning national championships, because people already see and embrace those standards pretty quickly now from day one.
You know what? I just love that. And here's something that I never even thought about. Here you are winning national championships, national awards in an area that most people don't think about, right? I mean, here we are. We're in the middle of the world. We're at the very end of the World Series, right? The last game is today. Of course, the World Series is massively well-known. But who would ever thought that there's an award to be won for landscaping or groundskeeping or horticulture? Unless you're in that industry. My point being is there's awards available to all of us, and if there isn't, it may be time for you to create one. Can you create an award for your industry? Can you create an award for your company? Can you create an award for your department?
I think you can.
All right. Yeah. No, I think that it just blows me away. I'm always blown away, Jeff, by the fact of there's so many industries out there that have an awards program, have a trade journal or two or three, have a trade association or two or three. It's just amazing how much is out there. Okay, so let's talk about this. You know, it's called soft skills. And I want to talk about why cultivating soft skills pays off over the long term. Give me your thoughts on this.
Bert, we found that we could create some drama like nobody else. We were great at cultivating trauma, and that's not a good thing. One day I just got to the point where I was sick and tired of the drama, and I said, I've got to do something different. And so you're talking about soft skills. When you're not doing soft skills, drama comes and all the other problems. So here's what I did. I did something that I had never heard anybody do before, and I wanted to try it, see if it worked, and I've been doing it now for 6 years. I simply stopped for 1 hour every month and brought a handful of our team members, frontline supervisors, everybody, just brought a handful in for 1 hour, and we would either watch a TED Talk or we would watch a leadership video, or we would take one of your blogs that Bert had written, and we would read it, or we would do something like that and just talk about it. Raise the level of thinking that we weren't just in our own pity, but now we were in our prosperity. We were in the moment. We were elevating everything about our department. And I'm telling you, I was so surprised at how everybody loved the meetings. They truly embraced them. And you know what happened to the drama? The drama really declined, and even our biggest drama person found another job after 6 months because he had lost his influence. He lost his influence in our group, and it was a good move for him. It was a good move for us. And I tell you, putting the emphasis on growing leaders. So we call that class Leader to Leader, where we just bring in anybody, any kind of leader from on a video. It's a great, inexpensive way to do it and elevate the talking. And my role in that is to facilitate questions. It's not a time for me to preach. It's not a time for me to go off on everybody. My job is to facilitate and get others to talk. And it's been amazing how better we've got to know each other, how we trust each other more. Now, it's not a kumbaya, let's all feel good. It's talk about real things and talk about things that matter. It's amazing how much more transparent and how much better we do things.
Absolutely. What I have found, Jeff, I want to get your opinion on this, because they refer to them as soft skills because they're kind of hard to measure. But the reality is our soft skills, our people skills, our emotional intelligence, if you will, make or break our relationships, our companies, our team, everything. I mean, they are really the most important skills to have.
Absolutely.
Do you agree? Disagree?
Yes, I agree. And you know why most – why do you think, Bert, why do you think most people don't do it?
I would think because it feels weird or awkward or I don't know. I mean, I don't know why. I know one of the reasons they don't do it is because it's not measurable. I think the other reason is because it's the real deal. I mean, it's easy for you and I to talk about numbers. Hey, you know, how much did we do today? That's a measurable. But for you and I, especially as men, to sit down and say, hey, how are you feeling? That is uncomfortable. What is your take?
Well, I think some of it is measurable, though, because we've seen mowing even decrease from 4 days down to 3 days. We've seen maintenance costs go down because we're communicating better. And then Landscape University has been a huge game changer for us as far as productivity. And so that's all about developing not only skills out in the field, but communication skills, leadership skills. And if you start thinking about soft skills as talking and warm fuzzies, then you'll get lost. But if you think about leadership skills, and that's what we talk about, is growing leaders into leaders, then it becomes much more if you would, macho or much more real, to where, hey, we're developing people who can make a difference not only here at the workplace but at home. That to me is the value. You start seeing even more success but even significance in your life. I'll share a quick story. I had a guy come in a year or so ago, and he goes, I love this leader-to-leader class we're doing. He goes, it has helped us out in the field. We are much better, all these things. And he goes, but I want to tell you something. Stop for a minute. He looked down. He goes, I want to tell you that this stuff has changed my life. And he goes, it saved my marriage. He says, I was getting ready to divorce my wife. And he goes, I realized I was the problem. You know, and that's I think, why some of us don't do it is because we don't want to have that self-awareness that we're the problem. And that is very eye-opening when you start doing some of this. You realize you can't change people. The only person you can change really is yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a great story. A lot of times we do not want that spotlight on ourselves, and we certainly don't want to, again, look in the mirror and say, hey, it's me. The reason my marriage isn't working, it's because it's me. The reason I'm not being an effective team leader, it's because me. Or the reason my job or my career is not going the way I want it to be, the way I want it to, is because of me. It can be very scary. I think it's a very insightful story.
Yeah, it is. It's very scary. Even when I told you about that drama that we were having, the problem wasn't the people out there in our workforce. It was me who was allowing it to go on. You know, I was a part of the problem too. So, you know, that's where we start, is with ourselves.
Absolutely, absolutely. It took me forever to realize that there is no out there, right? It's all inside. Listen, we're getting short on time, but I want to ask you this question, because I think that this is a question that you probably get asked a lot. I know people who own a business are thinking, this is all great stuff. Jeff, I love what you're talking about, but how do I recognize a leader from a weeder? Talk about this.
Wow, that's very insightful, but I look at everybody as a leader. Now, it's what level of degree can they lead? They've got to lead them. Everybody's got to lead one person every single day, Bert, and that's themselves. Now, how do they lead themselves? In a positive way, or are they a negative way? But you really start seeing when people start looking for the success of the team, the success of others. They want to teach others. They have a real desire for standards. But they also have the people skills to help others. When we often say, if you don't want others to be successful around you, then we've got a problem. You want these students who come in here and work with us to be extremely successful, whether they stay in this industry or not. We're working for your success. And so that's the attitude, is even no matter where the worker is, do you really want them to be successful? Even so, they might even leave your company. Do you want them to truly be successful in life?
Yeah. You know what? That's an interesting idea there, that do you really want them to be successful whether or not they stay with your company, right? That is really separates, I want to say, separates the leaders from the non-leaders, really, because if you just want people to grow enough to stay within your company or your department more, then you're not being true to them or a true leader. But if you are saying, hey, Jeff, I want the best for you, whether that means you go off and do your own thing or whatever, I want to support you. I want to grow you as a leader, regardless of what it means to me, that's a huge, bold step.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a bold step. When I started telling people, look, I'm glad that you're here working with us, but if you hate this job and you're only here to get a pension and a paycheck, you're going to waste 25, 30 years of your life. I want you to love. I want you to have a purpose and a passion for what you do. Or go find it. Go find what it is that you want to do and be the best at it. Be the best of the best. And that's been very rewarding, because we've had people who've gone on and done some great things out of our department. I mean, we hated to see them leave, but it allows us to be a part of their success and tell a bigger story.
Yes. Yes. And what's interesting about those situations too, Jeff, is you never know where that, how that comes back. You know, it may never come back, but in some cases, somebody may leave your situation. Either they go run their own department or they start their own company. And then, you know, 3, 4, 5 years down the road, maybe you co-author a book together. Maybe you're on stage together. Mm-hmm. Maybe you start another program together. You just never know what comes out of that. So I love that. And it reminds me also, listening to you reminds me of this thing that Amazon does. And they, I think, once or twice a year will do, I'll use one of your words. They do a pruning, right? And what they do is they'll pay their employees, I think, several thousand dollars to leave. So if you're unhappy, you don't see a future here, we'll pay you a couple of grand to leave.
Yeah.
And that says a lot about Amazon. And I'm sure that every year there's a couple of guys, a couple of people who say, yeah, you know, Amazon's not for me, I'm going to go. And there's nothing wrong with that. There is nothing wrong with somebody saying, you know what, working here is not for me, I got to find my own thing. However, the longer you stay, you're sucking up energy from, you know, that the team and the company, and you're not allowing somebody else who's going to love it to get there. And so that's why I agree with what you're saying. If you're unhappy, you know, let's just hurry up and get you someplace where you're going to be happier, because that way everybody wins.
Absolutely. I mean, that's, you're doing yourself a disservice, aren't you? I mean,
yes,
you're not being fair to yourself.
Absolutely. Jeff, we're out of time. And I want to say, man, I've had so much fun getting to know you and learning about your program. I love this whole thing that you've done with landscaping and turning it into a platform. Your latest book, Growing Weeders into Leaders, Leadership Lessons from the Ground Level. And before that, his other book was Pruning Like a Pro. And if you want to find out more about Jeff, you can go to Jeff McManus. That's McManus.com. Jeff McManus, thank you so much for stopping by today.
Bert, thanks for having me. Love what you're doing. Thanks for being a leader in this space. And keep cultivating greatness, my friend.
I love it. Keep cultivating greatness. Thank you, Jeff. You know what? I just love it. And there's so much you can learn from Jeff. I mean, everybody is in a separate industry. You know, so, you know, if you're a plumber, you could have a whole platform just like Jeff does with plumbing type vocabularies, you know, how to drain the swamp of your leadership, how to, you know, I don't know, plug up the holes. I don't know. You know, anyway, I'm just brainstorming here, but I love what Jeff has done. He's taken something that most people would never imagine and created an entire platform, written two books. You could hire him to be a speaker or a consultant. You can go to jeffmcmanus.com and find out what he's up to. How many landscapers, ornamental horticulturists, do you know that have done this? Jeff's the first guy I know that's ever done this. But I bet you it's probably less than 1% or 2% that do this, because a lot of us listen to that negative thinking in our head, like Jeff was talking about, and we let our negative dominating thoughts crush our dreams. Speaking of dominating thoughts, if you want to check out my upcoming book, you can pre-purchase the book and some bonuses at dominatingyourmind.com. Dominatingyourmind.com, I was just told that they're working on it today, so it may or may not be up. But anyway, hopefully you will check it out, dominatingyourmind.com. And Dominating Your Mind is all about 10 simple strategies that'll crush your fears, destroy your doubts, and make you unstoppable. Yeah, baby. Anyway, I appreciate you very much. Remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch, and check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.